This is Johnny Moore and James Chekhov, and we're sitting here in Black's Club in the West End of London, and we're talking to Tom Mann and Jonathan Quirney, and we're here to find a bit more about the success of English Cut, which is a tailoring business recently promoted very successfully via the English Cut blog. Tom, maybe you'd like to kick off by telling us how all that got started.
I had the usual standard website. And Hugh McLeod, he would often say to me, look, you know, the things you tell me about the business, I find really interesting. None of that's on any website. You know, just the little stories and just all sorts of things. Why don't you put it on a blog? And I'd never even heard of the phrase before. I didn't know what a blog was. So he said, look, you know, just write it down. We'll set it up for you and just give people information. Even if you think it's information that they don't want to hear, just give it to them. And so we did, and we started, and that was January. And it just went through the roof within 5 minutes. And it's opened up a new market. Whereas in the past, all of my customers were generally recommended or were from a background where they appreciated what bespoke was and generally a more affluent background. But then you had a huge amount of the spending public that were intimidated by Savile Row.
It's quite an intimidating place.
It is. Oh. It intimidates us. I mean, I remember going for my interview there. I mean, well, you're scared for interviews as it is, but never mind walking down Savile Row and strolling to Anderson & Sheppard. Yeah. So what's been marvellous is I've literally spelled things out, which is that we presume people know what they want and know about the product and how the system works. And I just sort of took that for granted. But then when I listed it all down, I'd get people who would turn up because they had the confidence to stroll in. That I'd explain to them, you've got to know what suit is for, leave the rest to cutter to decide the fabric. And just little simple things like that. And it was just, you know, because I'd get a phone call from a guy, for example, and he'd say, I'd like to come for a fitting. I'd say, what's your name, sir? Mr. Smith. Well, I don't have a fitting for you, sir. I haven't measured you yet. It's just silly things like that. And it's like, what's it called then? Well, you're coming to be measured first, then we'll have a fitting. And I just put things like that on the logs, on the blog, so people feel better that not dropping a clanger straight away, you know, sort of thing. So it's just worked really well. And I've got a lot of new customers.
Is it a lot of the things you thought were quite boring?
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of businesses, not just tailoring, you know, just presume people know.
I think it's interesting because marketing in the last century of high quality goods was very much about adding and creating mystique. And what's working for you sounds like the opposite of that. Yeah. It's actually taking away some of the mystique because the underlying product, unglamorized, is actually attractive to people.
That is definitely true. And I think people's taste in a lot of things is going that way. You know, like I said, I mean, Savile Row is a bit of a closed club, but people now, because of the internet, are learning more about the product. So they're not being bowled over by whatever Jerry Hall was wearing in 1978. You know, they're looking beyond that now, and, you know, see Beckham in a suit. They don't take that as gospel, the best suit in the world anymore. They'll turn on the computers and they'll find out what it's all about. And it applies to everything. I have a good friend who joined us, Stephen, a watchmaker. And he's a watchmaker. His father's a watchmaker and a real McCoy. And through the 70s and 80s, the business suffered an awful lot because everybody wanted a cool quartz watch. It kept brilliant time. You never had to wind it up. Now, you go into any luxury shop that sells watches, you can't find a quartz watch. Not at the top end. Nobody wants them anymore. They're just, well, I'd rather have something that's beautiful. It loses 5 minutes a week. Big deal. And it's things like that, and you get the same approach with clothing. They want a human being to have made that suit. And the blog allows real people to be attached to the product.
You know, I think there's an element these days, people are so used to hearing inside organisations or knowing so much about people's lives that by giving them the opportunity to kind of peer inside your business, that satisfies their interest.
Yeah, it really does. And there are other things that are nice about it. Now, I can't think of any marketing tool that would have ever done this. I get comments from kids of 15 years old. I tell you what, I don't have the money, but as soon as I get out of college, I know exactly where I'm going. And it's just, I mean, it's fantastic. I mean, 15-year-old kids, they think, oh, you know, I want a suit with all that soul into it. And it's absolutely brilliant. I mean, I would never have thought I could convince any 15-year-old high school kid in Oklahoma to put the first thing on his to-do list is to buy a bespoke suit.
Also, I think some tailors try and keep the customer in the dark slightly, but like you're saying, I think it actually works in the reverse order. It doesn't help in any way. It stops people from walking down Savile Row.
And one of the things that I think I got from your blog, Tom, was that it's not as if all your customers are the super rich, is it? Because there's a band of customers for whom your suit is kind of their luxury purchase for the year. They're not making tons of money, but this is the one part of their life where they decide to kind of treat themselves to something really good.
And it is something as well, if you... We never really analyse it like that, but if you want to sort of nickel and dime it, as they say, the value in a suit like that is far greater than anything off the peg, because, all right, it costs £2,000, for example. And you can get you can quite easily spend £500 or £600 for an off the peg piece of rubbish.
Yeah.
So, okay, it's two or three times as much, but it will last 10 times as long, and it will fit, and it will be able to get altered. Like I said in the article, you could give it to your nephew in the end. And because of the style, we work for everything to revolve around us. It'll always look good. And a lot of people know that, you see. So they're not coming in and ordering 10 suits. They're ordering one suit every couple of years. And they've started doing that when they're like 25, so...
So have you mentioned earlier, is it a different group of people that are coming to you from the blog?
Yes.
Or more of the same?
I'm getting more of the same, of course, because the interest on it... Just push it up the Google rank.
So you're on the front page there? Or?
Yeah, it's on page one. Sour Otero, it comes up page one, yeah. So, but then, because of the way the blog is laid out, I'm getting these brand new types of customers. I mean, Advocate, you've met him before, I mentioned him. He's a lovely man. Drives a Ferrari. Race horses all over the place. And all he's ever had is ready to wear. I don't know, he's just not educated in that field. You know what he was buying type of thing. Because he just read English Cup and said, oh, thanks very much. I'll come and spend £8,000 with you. How's about that? And that's what he did. He would never have came here if I'd have given him a nice glossy brochure and said, we have been making the finest suits for 125 years for princes and royalty. It just
that would scare him, yeah.
It would. Yeah. They were just like, all right.
And everyone knows that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not news about Savile Row, is it?
Exactly. Exactly.
So kind of what interests me about that story is that a lot of people following the growth of transparency online have been saying this is going to hit the profit margins of all businesses, because once people know how things are done and have seen the truth, no one will be able to make any profit anymore. Yet your story seems to run against that, because you're selling a premium product more successfully with more transparency.
I can't see that happening, to be honest, because people have to make a living. I mean, and you can criticise and take anything apart, a car, a stereo, a bottle of wine. But ultimately, somebody's got to be earning a living at the end of it. And we all know that. Oh, it'd be very nice if we could have everything at cost. And when you spell things out to everybody, it wouldn't put me off. All I want to know is it value for money? I'm not interested in how much somebody, earns per item or earns a living out of it. But is it good value to me? Is that money well spent? And I think as long as you say, well, it is, and it'll stand up to scrutiny, you're home and dry. That's all you can do. That's how I feel about it anyway.
On the blog site, can you tell us briefly about the amount of content you're putting on it and where that's coming from?
Well, what I did when I first started it, I just thought there are serious main things that need to be addressed. And they're on the sidebar. One of them, which is very simple, but people like, and it's just called So You Can't Afford Bespoke. And what I tell people on there, I say, look, if you've only got £120 to spend, you could do a lot worse than go to Marks and Spencer's, because for the money, that's the best suit you're going to get. And if it's got a label on it from Hugo Boss or something, I'm sorry, but it's made in the same type of factory. It's fused, it's glued together, totally machine made. Go by, if you like the cloth, how the block fits. And I've literally started from the bottom all the way up, and I did this huge long list. So everybody can kind of look at it and say, yeah, Marks and Spencer's, I don't feel so guilty now. But it's the truth, because as a ready-made product goes, there's nothing wrong with it. And it's just so, it kind of lifted the lid on. Then I went through the different stages of, okay, you get your ready-to-wears. This is what makes an expensive one in comparison to a cheaper one. Then you have a next level up from that. Then you have what's called made-to-measure. Don't confuse made-to-measure and bespoke. It's a totally different animal. Because people often say to me, oh, but I can get a suit made-to-measure for £600. I say, yeah, because it's made-to-measure, it's not bespoke. And people don't know what the difference is. I say, well, how come he's charging £2,000? Because I've got a guy sitting there sewing it together. And I just, a nice simple way of putting it, they say, well, yeah, it's a lot of money. I say, well, put it this way. This guy spent the last 20, 30 years learning how to make beautiful clothes. You get a roofing contractor to work on your semi-detached house for 2 days, and you wait for the bill he's going to give you. It's it's a craft. It's people want paid for things like that. So I listed all of that out. And then I did a who's who of Savile Row, which people really like because it's not what they expected. They're all looking at it. The knives are out here. It's quite the opposite, because effectively my who's who, which is, I suppose, is written with about as good authority as anyone. And the first thing I said is, look, my who's who is this. Who are the good ones? Who are the bad ones? I don't really know, because it's too personal. It's way too personal. I mean, I know Huntsman. I could go into Huntsman, and it'd be the best suit in the world. It would be, you know, X, Y, Z. Money, no problem. Wouldn't make any difference. But I wouldn't like the suit. And that's not because they're inferior. It's because they make a very hard, structured coat, which I don't like. And that's all there is to it. So for me,
question of style.
Exactly. Yeah. So for me to walk away and say Huntsman, they're no good. It would just be absolute foolish. It'd be a hypocritical thing to do. And I often notice that a lot of journalists do say that. And when they say somebody's brilliant, they don't give a reason why. It's just like, well, I like them. And I think I got a cheap suit when I was there anyway. I think that's what the truth of it is half the time. It's things like that. So
your content is coming from your expertise.
Yeah.
And you've just been given the opportunity to lay it out.
Exactly. And that's all it is. And then, you know, once I got the main kind of hardcore information, just silly things like the fabrics, how do they work? Because you walk into a shop, and especially not in Savile Row, because they wouldn't do that, but if you walk into a fabric shop, for example, something on Regent Street, and some poor naive chap looks at a length of cloth and says, what's fine? So the salesman will run over and say, oh, it's Super 150, so it's this and it's that and everything. And yeah, Super 150 is a lovely cloth. But I listed an article saying, well, why are they super? Because they're super in one respect, but they're not so super in another. They all have good sides and downsides. You need to crease more and they wear out quicker. But you know, people are entitled to know that. I mean, I say I never wear Super 120s and Super 1s. I wear standard Worcesters because they last forever and they're just easy to work on. So it's nice to get all that information. So people know when they're buying something special, they know what reasons they're buying it for, rather than just because somebody said, well, it's expensive. And what's nice about it, I mean, I talk about different people in the business as well, which is nice about our business. I mean, today, I tried a couple of jackets in the car, and I just wasn't happy with the way the sleeves were basted in. And I was a little bit short in time. I thought, oh, my, getting those taken out. But my tailor's away, his weekend was all a bit of a nightmare. So I just popped in to see a pal of mine, Ravi, and Anthony J. Hewitt. And Ravi, any chance, who can help me out with this? Wait here, so he gets straight on the phone, my tailor Charlie's coming to see you. I mean, I've never met the guy in his life. And some little tailor he rang him up on his mobile phone, and I think he was having a pint of beer and a lunch Friday afternoon. He just legged it over to the shop and did them for me. It's just things like that. The business is lovely. We do look after one another. Mm. There's plenty of it to go around. The reality of it is the biggest crisis is getting the suits made, finding the youngsters who want to spend 7 or 10 years learning the craft. That's the problem. So it's a real double-edged sword. Now the internet is lifting the lid off it, and people's tastes, I think, like I was saying earlier about the watches, they want that now. They really want that. But now we don't have the tailors.
Mm. Do you think the tailors may come through the blog?
Certainly. I've just written an article. It's all about them, because I am getting people who want to be apprentices ringing me up, emailing me all the time, asking me how old am I, you know, what do I need? I'm a lady, can I do it in this? So again, I'm listing all out and it's going to go on the sidebar. It's definitely generated interest. I mean, I've done a bit of teaching at the University of Hartford. With all these students, they all want something on the runway. But the reality of them is, I'd be lucky if 5% of them get a job in the industry. Never mind put something on a catwalk. I mean, that is the sad reality of it. There's just thousands of them rolling out. And if you suggest to them, yeah, how do you fancy making handmade clothes? I don't know, that's not sexy enough. But by the time I finished with those kids, they thought tailoring was sexy.
Yeah.
I said, look, it's not a bad living, you know. You get to travel all around the world. You get to meet really interesting people. Can I just remind you that Calvin Klein has his clothes made in Savile Row? You know, Ralph Lauren, you know, the chief designer Ralph Lauren. Guess who's making his clothes? Me. You know, it's just things like that. And people, oh, really? Yeah. It's good. The thing is, as well, you know, living at it. Everybody wants to be a designer, and they're all unemployed.
So what's the main difference between this and a website that you referred to at the beginning of the conversation?
But I think what makes a blog totally separate is personality at all. Because, I mean, I talk about people in business, you see. So people can kind of walk down the street and say, that's Anthony J. Hewitt. Oh, yeah. You know, it's just like things...
A slight gossip element.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. Definitely. And
which everyone likes.
I mean, I went out for a drink with a guy called Alan Cooper. He's a lovely chap. And Alan and Malcolm use the shop very kindly let me use the shop there. So we were, we all went out to the pub on Friday night, and we all have a good chat. We're all there together. And he just told me this lovely story about when he worked at Anderson & Sheffield. And it was about, he said, well, I was an undercutter. He said, and if you were a packer or a tailor, you got a mug of tea at 10 o'clock in the morning. If you were an undercutter, then you got a cup. If you were a cutter, you got a cup and a saucer. And if you were a director, you got a cup, a saucer, a biscuit on a little white tray. And I just love that. Your station in life, you can go by what you're drinking the tea. You know, and I put that on the blog.
Right.
But people loved that. They just thought it was lovely.
Well, the thing that really hits me talking to you, Tom, is this difference between the mystique of the brands and the big fancy labels.
Yeah.
And how what you're doing is about taking the mystique out, because the reality is actually more sexy than the image. Well, it's been absolutely fascinating talking to you both. Thanks very much indeed.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much.